720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth. We're now on the stream.
Whenever we say on the stream, I always think Matrix.
Why?
I don't know. We're in the stream.
It is a very different vibe, though, show to show. It feels like a different show. It feels like a little more...
It's like underground. I don't know.
Underground?
I mean, like...
is anything...
Gritty.
Yeah.
Matrix-y.
A little more vulnerable. Because, yeah. Well, we're not taking calls. So we're also not seeing when people call and tell us we're idiots. We don't see that as immediately.
No. I never see it. I don't. I'm
Look,
blind.
Anytime often people will call, just be like, what's the temperature today?
Oh, that's fantastic.
People just call for stuff.
I like that. I feel sorry for the producer.
Anytime it's a quick call, because we see when a call comes in.
Sure.
I assume they're just calling my producer to say, this person is an idiot.
And
because that happens all the time.
It does. I'm kind of in denial about that. So I think they're calling to say, hey, what's up? Have a good day.
I wish that was the case. Well, Jasmine Cooper deserves that. She is a fine producer and a fine human being.
Exactly.
Right. So we've been talking about how we're going to make 2018 very awesome. And in the research, we did a lot of digging on this topic. So we're going to be talking about this kind of throughout the week, really.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we stumbled across, and interestingly, it is a piece from The Atlantic from around Halloween. And yet we both found this piece.
It's so interesting.
You found it like yesterday. I found it like a week or two ago, which is really interesting that we both found this. But it's about why our brains enjoy fear sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it also was something that came up yesterday for me. My niece, who's 7, called and said, Tia, I went sledding and I loved it. I ran into a tree. Oh, it was so scary. I ran into a tree and then I hurt my head. It was awesome.
It was awesome.
So she loved it. And I mean, you know, she was hurt, but she was fine. But in terms of the, fear factor. She loved. I said, "Was it scary?" She said, "Yeah." But then I did it. So she was really proud of herself that she had sort of felt the fear and did it anyway, even if it meant minor scrapes and bashing. But into a tree. But she's fine. And that's sort of what sparked this in me a couple days ago. And for you, what sparked it? Like, what?
Anytime I see something about fear, I'm interested in it because it's always been something I've been fascinated by my whole life.
Sure.
Because I've always seen it as a signal. Always seen it as pain and fear have always been like signals to me. Like, oh, because I think they're always covers. It's always a lid on the pot. I've always been like, okay, what's in that pot? What is that thing under it?
You have like a curiosity and a scientific.
Insatiable curiosity about anything that feels like painful or fearful. It's been like, I want to go to that and find out what's under it. Because it's never just that. It's always something, if it's like, if someone says they're like scared of a relationship, like what's really under it is about vulnerability.
Yeah, for me, a lot of my fear is control.
Okay.
I'm afraid of losing control. And guess what? I have very little anyway. So it's sort of being in denial about the fact that the world happens and that I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I can take care of myself the best I can.
Yeah, that's all.
But I don't have control over the plane, the car.
No.
Other people.
I'm telling you, Jembe, if ever I could convince you ever to consider skydiving, I think it is such an exercise in surrender.
Oh, man.
Because there's nothing you can do about it. The minute you're out of the plane, there's nothing you can do about the outcome.
Oh, boy.
And it's so beautiful and liberating and such a fun.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of the fears seem, once you go through them or look them in the face, seem...
They're gone.
And you feel liberated, freedom.
Totally.
From that fear.
There's so much space in your brain. Like, I don't think I realized how much fear I was carrying around until I left it 3 miles up in the air. And then I was like, oh my gosh. It's been like kind of liberating since I did it.
Sure. I had a boss who was very afraid of flying. So he took flying lessons.
Yeah.
And it was gone.
Yeah.
Because he realized, like, well, one, he realized the physics and the...
Right.
But the other thing was, he was like, you know what? It's just beautiful. I'm going to let go.
Yeah.
And just give it a shot.
Yeah.
And I really was, like, in awe of that and inspired.
Sure.
And so we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as I get older, the fears get... not more irrational, but they are more about control.
Yeah.
Because I think I feel like in the world, especially 2017, the slugfest, there's a lot going on that I don't have control over. And so, but it ties into fun. Like some of my fears, if I could liberate myself from them, I could have more fun.
Oh, you would have so much fun. The minute you landed on the ground in your parachute, you'd be like, that's awesome. I'm doing it again.
Yes.
You would be super excited. I would also say, I would also offer this anecdotal evidence in that I feel like the more stuff I've made myself do to confront fear, the in a sense, more control I felt in my
life. Because you're like, okay, well, I then had a choice and I faced this fear. And so I can control the pot now.
Yeah.
Because I know what's in there.
I know what's underneath that lid and I can deal with putting the lid on or not. Or sitting there looking at it, it's not a big deal.
So there's this another little antidote.
Tell me.
A guy went to his psychiatrist and said, I have this terrible dream. This is a little story. Well, had this terrible, terrible dream and a scary monster. And he turns around. He's chasing me and then turns around. Anyway, whatever. I can't see his face. And right before he turns around, I wake up. And it happens every night.
Mm-hmm.
And the psychiatrist said, look, I want you to confront this monster in your dream, in your nightmare. So he said, okay, I will. I'm scared, but I'll do it. So in the next night, he had the dream, of course. And the dream, and then the monster, and finally he said, turn around. And the monster turned around, had this hideous face. And he said, what do you want from me? The guy and the monster said, how should I know? This is your dream. So like we make the fear huge.
Huge, 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 huge.
And it's a lot of times not that feelings aren't valid, but they're not facts. And they're and fear, you know, they say fear is false evidence appearing real. F-E-A-R.
Yeah.
And I would love to believe that. And yet there's a difference between believing that and doing the thing that scares me.
Absolutely.
I mean? It's a great idea.
Absolutely. There's a difference.
Right.
Without a doubt, there is.
It's a great idea. But even I used to be into roller coasters. I'm kind of scared of them now because I think I'm tempting fate or some weird.
Well, I mean, I think it's valid that, like, I too have, in a sense, worry less and but in another sense, worry more the older I get because we know what can happen. Like, the longer we live, the more we know outcomes that are possible.
Yeah, and I think there's truth. There's a reality in all of the fears.
Right.
Like
in fact, sometimes some flights don't make it back.
Sometimes people
the parachute
pass
doesn't
away.
Open.
Sometimes
we're all going
die.
To. Right. We're all going to die. Like sometimes things happen.
And I think you're right. As we go, we have more of those experiences.
Right. And so we can say to me, I've always found it really cloying and irritating when people go, "Hey, it's going to be okay." It may not, and we need to be frank about that. Like, it may not.
And sometimes things aren't okay.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before, and I would love to be liberated. That's another thing for 2018, like, liberated from some of my fears.
Yeah.
And
well, maybe you could take it on bit by bit. Like, I wouldn't say start with skydiving.
Yeah.
So when I was about 30, one day, I was traveling a lot for work and all kind of stuff. But then just one day I got on a plane and I was very anxious to the point like I had a stomach ache. I really felt queasy.
Sure.
I felt a lot of anxiety about taking off. And we took off and I looked out the window and I about fell out of my chair. Something about heights. Suddenly I had a fear of heights that I'd never really had before.
Wow.
And I have to this day, I have no idea why I had that, but I think that kind of led to skydiving because, I mean, it took a decade.
Yeah, sure.
But nonetheless, it bothered me that I was carrying, it felt like a ball and chain that I was like carrying around and things I was telling myself, even casually, like when the sky deck, you know, the sky deck that opened, like, well, can't do that. That's not, that wouldn't be good. I have no idea if it'd be good or not. I just decided for myself.
Sure.
I can't have that experience because I would be afraid. But it doesn't matter how I feel about it. It just matters if I do it or not.
Right. And yes. And the non-judgment, I think, helps too. It's like, you know what? I don't, like you said, I don't know the outcome. It may be horrible, but
it might be awesome.
Be?
Right.
It's a 50-50 and probably more towards the awesome side.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So the first big, big thing I made myself do.
Sure.
It took a very long time. But years after that, I was living not far from Tribune Tower and I could see the Navy Pier Ferris wheel out of my bedroom window. And it gave me so much anxiety. Every time I looked at it, even subconsciously, I was always thinking it's going to roll off its little holders and into the lake.
Okay.
Okay, if it broke, it's probably not going to roll into. It's probably not going to be as dramatic as all that.
No,
but that every time I looked at it, that was always in my head.
Sure.
And so eventually, I made myself go on it
by yourself.
No, I took a young person with me, who I think she was probably about 12 or 13 at the time, who loved it and had no fears at all. And I thought I would probably act a little cooler because I felt like I needed to be responsible. I felt like that would be helpful.
That helps me actually.
Yeah.
When I take my niece and nephew.
Right. Because I need to be like tough for her. Yeah. But actually, she was tough for me.
Yeah.
And she was really, and she knew what I was doing more or less. Yeah. So we get to the top and it stopped for a little bit.
On purpose?
No, it just stops sometimes. And it stopped for like 6 minutes up at the top. And she starts like wiggling the car and we're shaking.
No.
Exactly what I said. I was like, don't do that. I'm freaking out. Stop. I'm freaking out. And she goes, man, just look.
Oh.
And I'm like, what? And I realized I hadn't looked down. I hadn't done anything or I hadn't looked up. I just was like looking down and focusing on what could go wrong. And it was like a light went off. And I suddenly I looked beyond her head and what was past her head was a view of Lake Michigan that no one had at that moment. But those few of us up at the top of that car. And then I looked to the side and I was like, oh my God, look at Navy Pier. Oh my God, look at the city. Oh my God, look at all the boats this other way. And it was. That's all she said.
Yeah. I've had that experience. That's beautiful. I was in a plane and we were in storm clouds, which they call boomers, apparently pilots call. And I was terrified. Yeah. And, the pilot was navigating around these boomers. We were going really slowly compared to, and he's like, 'cause I didn't want it to be too turbulent. When we landed, I said, oh my gosh, you did such a good ducking and weaving. He goes, weren't those boomers beautiful?
Right. What a difference. Like,
they actually were.
Yeah.
They were beautiful.
But we're focused at the time of, is the plane going to fall?
Am I going to die? Basically the.
So the guy that I did, when I was skydiving, I did a tandem jump. And the guy that I was attached to, Sergeant Noah Watts from the Army Golden Knights is who I was attached to. And I asked him, have you done this a lot? Do you have a lot to live for? I want to jump with someone who's like got vacation tickets booked, has a good marriage, has to go home and feed the cat. Like you've got things to live for. And he stopped me. I was being funny, but serious. And he stopped me. And he said, listen, I love me way more than I love you.
Hmm.
I don't know you, lady. You seem fine, but I'm a big fan of myself. And I have to assume the same is for pilots.
Yeah.
They got stuff they want to go home
They've got things.
They
want to live. So, it's sort of getting outside myself and looking at the bigger picture, too. Like, wait, I'm not alone here.
Yeah.
These people are, not only are they trained forever and ever, they have lives.
Sure.
They have people in their
lives. And just like everybody in the world, like, they want to get through their shift and go home.
Yeah, it's not, it would be like people thinking, I don't know, you do something crazy on radio or I don't know.
Well, like, no. We heard about that pilot who was suffering from major mental illness and crashed on purpose.
So it happens.
It happens. And therefore, like we hear about that guy and we forget about the thousands of other people that do that for
a
living.
It makes big news. It's very dramatic. I once had a mentor who said to me, yeah, your fears are based. It's not like you fear aliens are going to come down.
It's not like you think like the gummy bears are going to come alive.
Right.
And kill
that
you.
Would be psychosis.
A little bit.
I have, you're right, fears that happen sometimes.
Yeah.
But they happen very rarely.
Right.
And look at all the beautiful things that happen. And
right.
The safe thing.
It's not newsworthy to say,
no, right.
700 flights landed really fine today.
I wish they would say that.
That would be a very slow news day.
But I would love it. I'd be like, this is the greatest news I've ever heard in my life. I like hearing the positive stuff.
9 million people crossed the street without incident.
Yes.
700 planes landed.
I think we should have that kind of news. I mean, it makes for a very boring day.
Very boring day.
But I would like it. I love when they have those what's good news sections. And I more would like who didn't die today section. Like, how many people, were born? And these people went on an escalator without an incident. Elevator didn't fall from the shaft.
No.
So anyway, I think focusing on the stuff that goes right is probably a good idea for me.
Yeah.
Facing the fears and focusing on maybe not the newsworthy, dramatic catastrophes.
Okay, but you cringed when I said the Navy Pier Ferris Wheel.
I've never been on there. I'm scared.
I've only been on that one time.
I should go.
Yeah, let's go.
I'll go with some. See, I'm better if I have a partner.
Yeah.
As someone who I trust that is like, look, Amy Guth is not an idiot. She's not. She's not going to do something that's going to endanger her life without
a really good reason.
Yes. Well, the skydiving you had a good reason.
I had a good reason.
But I mean, if you also think about it, we endanger our lives every day.
Right. But what could I do to make, like, what is my presence doing to make it?
It's just calming.
Okay.
No, it's an emotional support thing. I don't think you're going to like...
Because I have no influence over what happens on that.
But I do better with a partner.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Which is why I like doing radio with a partner, too. I feel like if it's all on me, oh, no.
I know.
I need help. I like help.
It's a very different vibe to do radio solo than with a partner.
The first time I did radio was up here 3 years ago. I thought I was going to die. I did not know. I thought the red light would come on and I wouldn't be able to speak.
Oh, dear.
And then I would fall over from panic. But then I did it.
But then you did it.
Oh, that was pretty hard.
And you trusted yourself a little more.
A little more. A little more. But there have been times where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is... And then you have a lovely engineer or someone that says, listen, you're going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. It's a button.
And I needed help. I needed to feel like someone had my back.
Yeah.
And so before I, like when we go on stage and stuff like that, a cast sometimes will say, I've got your back and give you.
Right.
I love that feeling versus you're all alone. Good luck. You're going to die.
Buddy. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
I had, when I was trained to operate the board in the studio, I was really nervous about it because to me, the stakes felt astronomical. Like if I hit one wrong button, I'm going to bring down the whole station.
That's how I felt.
And people are going to be mad at me and I'm going to be fired. Yeah. Like it's going to be terrible. Something's going to happen. It's going to require repair. And it's like, first of all, there's short of like dumping water on the board and shorting it out. There's not much you can do. Yeah. That can't be quickly fixed by one of the very smart engineers here. But also, the guy that trained me, he knew I was anxious about it and I kept going, but wait, okay, let me run through it one more time. This and this. Okay. In this scenario, he goes, okay, literally that scenario has happened one time in 25 years. So good that you know
it.
Here's the mic. Here's what happens if someone swears. You dump that audio. Here's this. Here's what happens here. Here's how to fire commercial breaks. Here's how to do this. And then I was like, okay, let me run through that again. And he goes, kid, it's not going to kill you.
Yes.
No one's going to die if you hit the wrong button.
Right.
You're going to realize you hit the wrong button because you're not going to hear yourself, and then you're going to hit the right button. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine.
And I was like, but there'll be dead air. He goes, that happens sometimes. And you immediately, everybody jumps into action and it gets fixed.
Very fast.
Yeah, real fast.
It's not, but it does. The first time you do something.
But it was, yes, but it was helpful to hear, you're not going to die.
Oh, yeah. I said that, so when I go in for auditions, sometimes there's a youngster, because now I'm playing moms, and so sometimes I'll have an actor or an actress that's in their teens, and they're so frightened. And look, I'm nervous too, but I know now, because I have done the
You've
thing.
You've done the thing.
Over and over, that I'm not going to die in there. I'll die one day. Chances of dying in there are very low. So I look at the young person, and I say, this is scary. We're not going to, look at me.
We're not going to
die in there. And they are like, one, they're like, you crazy.
You're
lady.
A weirdo.
But also afterwards, they're usually like, thank you. That was so fun. They can have a little fun because, so in that scenario, I'm not afraid. I really am not.
Right.
I'm like, I'm not going to die.
Cause I think that's a good point because I think our brains don't necessarily differentiate between different kinds of fear. Like if there's a spider in your house or if you have like, you know, a SWAT team surrounding your house, it's all scary.
And it's scary.
It's just all one note.
Yeah, and it depends on what your particular brand of scary is.
Yeah.
Like, if you're really, really scared of spiders, that's valid.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, so I'm not scared of certain things. Certain things do not scare me.
I used to be afraid of any kind of insect that could crawl up to me without me hearing it. I need nothing
sneaky.
Should be able to sneak up
Surprise.
On me. I don't want to suddenly look down and see a bug in my foot. And then one day I just sort of got over that. One day I was like, oh, look at that millipede. I'm going to pick him up. What am I doing?
Yeah, I'm not afraid of that kind of stuff.
Well, so we all got our
things.
We
all got our things.
Goof. And I think they shift.
Oh, sure. They change. They wear different masks.
They do. And I think it's important to kind of let them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't have to worry about this now. I got this crap to worry about.
Right.
I got this whole... but the important thing is, like, I think it's important to not keep telling yourself, oh, no, I'm really scared of spiders, when in fact, I'm not.
And I can't do blank.
And I can't, and therefore I can't. Yeah.
Right.
That's very important. All right. Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth here on the stream on 720 WGN. We're going to take a little break and be right back, get some news happening for you, all that good stuff. Back in a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth here on the stream.
I've got another situation.
Wow, your headphones just really broke in half, didn't they?
Every time. I have this thing where...
This is sort of headphones graveyard up here.
It is. It really is.
They pop back in, though. You can pop that back in.
Yeah, I will.
I'm just in time. You're just like holding it so you can be like a DJ and be cool about it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Okay, here we are on the stream.
Right.
But no. Anyway, I'm going to put it down.
You know what? I just had an idea.
What?
I should think things through before I blurt them out, but nonetheless, I'm going to say it.
Okay.
Okay. Just now, during Domati's report, when he was talking about the sub-zero temperatures and calling 311 if you need some help, I was thinking about, oh, what about people without phones? People that don't have anywhere to live, don't have anywhere to go. Salvation Army has those warming centers, okay. Right? And so I was thinking, I wonder if there's like, we could print out the locations. There's like a bunch of them.
And read them.
And we could all of us, everybody, print and have a few copies in your handbag.
To give to people.
So if you find somebody, I usually keep like a granola bar and something too.
Right.
So don't just hand them paper. But like, here's a granola bar and some water, but also here's if you need a place to be,
here's
very cold today.
Centers.
Here's the warming
That's
centers.
A great
here's
idea.
The close one.
That's a great idea.
That's an idea I just said. If we all do that and all print them off and keep a couple copies in our purses and wallets, we can help people.
That's a great idea.
And that's like a easy way to be of service.
That's an easy peasy way. I also carry, sometimes I'll carry, most of the time, gloves. The dollar store, you can get all kinds
of
stuff.
I need to replenish my granola bar supply. Yeah. I usually have a granola bar for people.
It's just good to do.
Yeah.
You know, what's little to you could be huge to someone else. Or even...
I feel like everybody can give something.
That's true.
And we need to all take care of each other.
Be the big ear for each other.
I love that, the big ear. And, you know, we just can't rely on agencies to do everything. We need to be responsible for things ourselves.
I worked at a social service agency and there were very limited resources.
Right.
So we needed help too.
And I think sometimes we wait for like official things. I've told this story in the air before, but I had a coworker years ago who was crossing the street and got hit by a car, very fast. And she got thrown into a bus shelter. She lived. She had a long haul to get back to it. I mean, she broke a lot of bones. But she said the thing she remembered the most was opening her eyes and laying there and hurting so much. And everyone was just standing there looking at her. And she finally said, she said it felt like hours. Finally, she said, has someone called 911? And one woman was like, oh yeah, somebody call 911. She was like, I had been laying there. I was bleeding. I was hurting. I couldn't move. I couldn't catch a breath. And I had to tell them to call 911.
Yeah. So I, that's horrible. And I'm usually the person that jumps into action sometimes too quickly. I'm like, are you okay? Like in the theater one night, there was a woman who I thought was having a stroke and really she was snoring because she fell asleep during the play. Apparently
she was
it was
just
not
laughing.
Interesting. And I like jumped up, but that's my response because I don't want anyone to suffer by themselves if I can help it.
Yeah.
If I can help in some way, I've been in restaurants where I was in a restaurant with my husband where a man started to choke. Nobody got up.
Yeah.
People were talking.
What do you think it is? Do you think people don't want to feel silly?
No, I think it's people are two things in their own world.
Yeah.
Also scared to get involved or to enter outside, leave their little world.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, they might want to not be silly, but I think a lot of people are just doing their own thing. And they're like, oh, he's going to be okay. Someone else will. Someone else will. So what I did was jump up and start doing that maneuver on this guy.
Sure.
And said to the restaurant, call 911. And you know what they did? Handed me the phone to call while I'm doing the Heimlich. And I said, you call. Yeah. I don't know the address here.
I can't do
and
both.
So it worked out. The guy was fine.
Yeah.
The paramedics came very fast and took him, but he was talking and breathing by the time they came. But it's like, no, I couldn't believe it, even during the phone call.
You call. No.
You, what? I'm giving no. So I think it's sort of, I think people are also, there is a stun factor of like, is this really happening sort of a thing?
Yeah.
Or is this a joke? Or is this, or sometimes, I don't know, the bus thing is a little, that's
the
horrifying.
Bus thing.
Your friend.
The bus shelter.
Coworker.
Yeah.
That's the bus shelter.
Yeah.
She was dying, basically.
Sure.
And they didn't.
She wasn't dying, but she was very, very badly injured and needed urgent medical care.
Yeah.
And you know what? I slipped on some stairs one time walking in the winter. I slipped on some ice and fell. I wasn't badly hurt. It really was no big deal, but it hurt for a minute and I just kind of had to just lay there and just like check in.
Sure.
And I remember a man stepping over me.
What?
He stepped, not over my torso or face, but like over my leg and arm and just kind of gave me a scoff thing. And I literally didn't move because I was just like, the way I landed, I was like, make sure everything can move before you move.
You're not broken
and
in some place.
Doing a little first aid on myself. And then I was like, okay, fingers and toes move. Okay, slowly
Get
move.
Up.
Slowly. And I was slowly. And people were like, inconvenience. Not one person stopped and said, are you okay? Now, last winter, though, I stepped on the sidewalk and totally slid, like, cartoon style, like, bump, and, like, straight out. A guy was walking by with his dog, and he was a little awkward and embarrassed, but the dog went right to me. Oh, he was on one of those retractable leashes. Yeah. The dog went right to me and was, like, licking in my face. And I was like, hi, buddy. And I set up, and the guy was kind of couldn't look at me, but he was like, are you cool? Are you fine? I was like, yeah, I'm good. I just kind of wiped out. I'm okay. And I just kind of like torn up my hands a little bit because sure. I landed kind of on my palms. But it really impressed upon me. Like, that dog was a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Because of the year that I fell, and it, you know, I was sore for a couple of days, but I just remember being so mad at people
yeah.
and so like disappointed that, what am I, nothing? Not one person could even say, how are you?
Right.
So I'm like, I say that to say, I'm like you, Jen. If I see someone slip on the ice, I will go out of my way. Come here, let me hug you. You know, I don't, yeah. But I also like don't want to touch people no. without their permission.
No, I just.
I'll like help them up and then I'll be like, are you okay? Do you need a hug? Are you
right.
fine?
Right.
What do you need right now?
I will really ask. I will ask a lot of questions.
What's that, Jasmine?
So that's called when people like, I forgot what it's called. Innocent bystander.
Yep.
Syndrome, when people see things that are going on, but they don't know whether to react.
Yeah.
Just look.
And they assume everyone else is called.
Right. Because I remember that case in New York where the lady got stabbed like 7 times and people were watching in the windows and things
it
like
was
that. I can't remember.
Kitty Genovese.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
all the neighbors
oh,
saw
right.
it in the courtyard, but no
yeah.
one called 911. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's true. It's totally true. That's exactly what it is. Like, everyone assumes someone else will
or
take responsibility.
Or people don't want to, quote, get involved.
We've got to take responsibility for everything. I mean, this is back to the sidewalk shoveling thing that we were talking about earlier, right? We cannot wait for others. We
no.
just have to do it.
And we've also talked about there always has to be a first person to do it first.
Somebody's got to like hang their butt out in the wind and do it to make anything shift.
There was a story also about people who are in trauma and waiting for paramedics.
Mm-hmm.
It increases the likelihood that they will live if somebody's holding their hand.
That is totally, totally true.
And looking at them and saying, you are not alone.
I don't even know about looking. I think just touching you.
Yeah.
I had a really bad car accident in 2004. And there was a truck driver that saw it. And he got in the car behind me. He knew that I needed a backboard. I was very bad. I had flipped and it was
yeah.
bad. And he knew I needed to be still. And I was out for a minute and came to, and I remember how his skin smelled. He put an arm, he was in the seat behind me. He put an arm around to kind of hold my shoulders down and then the other arm around my head to keep it against the seat rest. And he was like talking in super jazz radio voice.
Yes.
Really calmly. And he was like, you're going to be okay. You're going to make it. I know. He's like, what do you feel right? And tell me, can you feel your toes? Can you feel your legs? And I was like, I can't feel my right side of my right leg. He's like, that's fine. You can feel your left one though, right? Okay. And he just kind of kept talking me through
yeah.
it. I never found him again. Like, his name came
wow.
up in a court case later, but I couldn't, the phone number was, I just want to call him and say thank you. The phone number didn't work anymore.
Wow.
But I always thought about him.
Sure.
And I've passed by a dude on the street before with his cologne, and I was like, like, that's
you remember
totally not him.
Your body remembers the smell.
Oh my gosh, I remember that so clear. So I totally believe that is true.
Yeah, I've done it. I once came upon an accident and I was like, okay, this person, and the person was lying in the road.
Yeah.
And I held his hand and just said, you're not alone.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, we got
and I'm
you.
I'm not going anywhere.
Cops are coming. Like,
everyone's on their way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I would want.
You need to be thinking forward. You need
yeah.
you need some kind of hope, even if it's just for the next couple of minutes. On the other note, though, there was a paramedic. Where was that piece? I can't remember. I want to say it was in the Atlantic. I'll find this
sure.
and tweet it out. It was
okay.
a paramedic wrote a story about why he said all the time people look at me and say, am I going to die? And he said, if you are, I'm going to tell you because I don't want your last minutes to be struggle.
Oh my.
It was really beautiful. At first, with the first couple of paragraphs,
sure.
I was like, that's cruel. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to tell me that because I would only fight harder. But he's like, if it's for sure, you have seconds left. You have a minute. He said there was like the first time he did it, it was a motorcycle crash. The guy's bleeding to death. It's,
yeah.
it's minutes away. And he looked at him and he was crying and he was like, man, am I going to die? And he's like, you are. You are. And that he said the guy just relaxed and he said he went without struggle.
Wow.
He went in a more peaceful way. And he said, and after that, I realized that was the right thing to do, it was a very moving piece. It wasn't,
sure.
it was in the last year that he wrote this. I think it was over the summer. It was stunning. It was so
Man.
Beautiful. Man, we got heavy.
We did. We did. But you know what?
That's okay.
Life can be heavy.
That's okay. I think we should not be afraid of the heavy things.
That's the fear part.
Yeah.
Like, life happens like this. Not all the time. Bad things do happen. And, I mean, we're all gonna go.
And sometimes I think we're quick to say things are positive and negative and good and bad. You know, like, sometimes they just are.
Yeah.
Even something that seems bad, like a death or something.
Yeah. Sometimes no, blessings come out.
Yeah. Sometimes like relationships get healed after decades of stuff. And sometimes like, well, that person, like it was very peaceful in her last moment or whatever. Beautiful things. Like, it's not always just like,
no,
it's hard. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's challenging,
but it's not necessarily like this sucks.
And my husband will always say, look for the good in the seemingly bad. And if I don't see it, assume that I just can't see it, but it's still there.
Oh, that's nice.
So stuff comes, you know, good stuff comes out of this or just important stuff.
Important stuff
comes out of seeming tragedy or real tragedy. But
yeah, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine when someone goes, how are you? What's going on? And you give them an update and they immediately come back with, that's awesome, or that sucks.
Yeah.
Like, let me just have it.
Yeah, don't judge my experiences.
Like, even on a small scale. One time, you and I were doing an overnight.
Yeah.
And we were, I think, we were in for Patty.
Yeah.
So I went to my regular yoga class, and the dude next to me on the mat was like, hey, what's up? Like, he's my friend. So I said hi. And I said something like, I can't get too chilled out because I got to go to work after this. He goes, man, that really sucks.
No, it's
like, no, it's
fun.
Really awesome. It's fun. And he was like, why? You have to work late. And I was like, well,
that's about your experience.
Mine's awesome.
Yeah.
What are we playing, Jasmine? There's ominous music.
That was frightening for a second. Speaking of fear.
I know horror movies, and I know that means the killer's about to walk in here and chop off our heads.
Oh, boy. Now, that would be challenging.
Yeah,
that's a real challenge.
I might say that's negative. But I'm saying, yeah, I'm not too quick to say something's negative or positive. I think most things are, few things are purely positive or purely negative.
It's all grist for the mill.
And everything is just kind of what it is. You don't necessarily have to constantly be saying and labeling, this is good, this is bad.
Right.
You can just be like, do I feel okay right now? Good.
What do I need?
I'm doing my best.
Right.
We're all doing our best, man.
I'm breathing. That?
You know what? A million years ago, we started this, talking about this piece in The Atlantic about fear. We didn't get very far.
Well, we did.
We not, did, but
not
a whole different
specific piece, but we did talk about fear. But yeah, let's continue with this article.
Well, so it breaks it up.
Okay.
It talks about why we would want to scare ourselves on purpose.
Yeah.
And which I think is really, really interesting. And it's about, I mean, indeed, at surface level, a lot of times thrilling activities can have a hit of dopamine attached to it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We love dopamine.
And there's that natural, high from like a flight or fight response. But I think too, there's another hit of dopamine on the back end. That's the slow drip of it. That's kind of like, I did that.
Yes, I feel like that after I fly.
Yeah.
I'm like, I did that. Awesome. Now I feel proud of myself.
Does it change each time since flying's like a repetitive thing?
No, I feel the same after every.
So it'll start from zero each time.
Yeah.
Go from like zero anxious.
And then I can
overcome.
It's changed. It has shifted a little bit. It's not as intense cuz I have worked on it.
Okay.
But definitely, I always feel the dopamine after. I definitely do, regardless of how the flight of my anxiety is. I feel like I've accomplished something, and I feel proud of myself, and I think that releases chemicals of like,
yeah.
I'm cool. I did good.
You know, I was reflecting on this in the last week, probably because so many people I know are traveling right now.
Mm-hmm.
I realize, I don't know if I have like an over belief in the transformational part of travel or what but it's not superstitious. I just feel like, there is some kind of value in like, I need to check in with people before I take off.
Mm.
Not because I think something's going to happen necessarily, but I find myself always doing that. As I'm sitting there at the gate waiting to take off before we power off our phones, I'll usually send a couple of text messages. Hey, taking off to so and so.
That's cool.
I don't know why I do that. And I realize how strange that is.
No, it's not strange.
I think it's strange.
Why do you think it's strange?
Because there people in my life don't do anything near that. They'll just go. And you'll be like, oh, you're in another place?
Like, I do all kinds of things. I'm like, listen, here's where I keep the... But I do check in too. Not to say, oh my God, I love you if I never see you again. It's more like, for me, I'm leaving a place. I'm traveling. I'm in the air. I'm sort of in this weird zone. Why not check in with people? I don't know. I don't think it's weird, but okay, I hear you.
Yeah, I've come across some people that just don't do that, and it's like, oh, you're in Canada. I had no idea. Or wherever.
Right. You're. And also, flying is a big deal in that we are in a giant metal tube in the air. And it's an event, whether it's we're scared of it or not. We are sort of traveling across time and space, like sure. The Twilight Zone. So I definitely feel like it's a sort of a no man's land. It's a transition. We're in,
right.
And I think it's good to let people know where you are also.
Well, that too. I mean, I think that's part of it, right? Like, yeah. I live alone, and if I, like, something happened to me, it might take a couple days for people to catch on to that.
No, not me.
Not you, because we talk all the time.
I'd be like, what's happening? I'd go over there. But you're right. But even my husband might not notice for a couple days. Like, I haven't seen that lady in a while. Where is she?
Remember that story about 5 years ago about a guy, this poor
died
man,
in his office.
Died at his cubicle on a Friday afternoon, was like the last one. People were like, you know, see ya, whatever his name was, Larry.
Don't work too late. Oh, boy.
And then they come in Monday and he's all still there. They were like, oh, he actually died Friday afternoon. Nobody knew it.
Here's the weird thing. That's that happens all the time.
That's tragic.
I've read about it. People who pass away, die at their desk and not discovered, and sometimes if it's over break for a week.
Oh.
So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, the good news in the business that we're in is that there's always someone here. So we
there is always someone, and they would push us aside and say, okay, next, something, call in a film.
Can I have Guth's time slot now that she's dead?
Right.
And be like that.
Right. But yeah, no, that it's good to let people know where you are anyway.
Part of it is logistics. Part of it is I just want to, I think, okay, so back to skydiving for a minute.
Yeah.
For that one, I did leave a couple of notes behind. They were on my dresser. Just like a couple of people I feel like I needed to say something to. If I didn't, if for some reason, because then I could be fully liberated that if it did go south, I know I've said those things.
Sure.
And then my friend had a list of just like, you know, I am doing something risky right now. So if it goes south, here's my brother's phone number and here's who to call. Here's this person here, you know.
Yeah.
And also there's some letters here. Hold my keys. And also like if I don't, for something happens.
Sure.
Like mail, make sure these letters get mailed.
Wow.
There's that.
What did you do with them after? You kept them for the next time you skydive?
Well, no, they'll be different.
Oh, okay. They've changed.
I mean, I kept them. I like stuck them in my file cabinet because one day I'll be like, to my little brother, I'll be like, look at this crazy thing I wrote right before I jumped out of a plane that was real sappy and dumb.
No, sappy and lovely. No, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to let people know where you're at and let people know your feelings about them, regardless of jumping or no, skydiving.
And before like an international flight, I feel like I really need to. Okay, I'm taking off. I'm going, and part of that is I'm going to be in a different time zone on the other side of the world.
I'm in transition.
Right.
And I'm going to be transported to another place. And this is where that place is. But
there was one flight where everybody was busy at that hour and I couldn't really get anybody to respond. And I felt kind of sad about it taking off. It's when I went to South Africa.
Yeah.
I took off.
That's like a 50-hour flight.
It's 21 hours.
Yeah.
It's a long haul.
No.
And I was just, I felt kind of like sad that I didn't, you know.
I have all these rituals. I have all these rituals before I take off. And I love a landing, though. And even though, quote, people are like, landing is more dangerous, or whatever. I'm like, I'm getting closer to the ground. I don't care how I get there, but I know this is over.
When I used to really struggle with fear of heights, I could see out the window and be like, okay, I could make it if I fell from this distance. I could make it if I fell from here. Okay, I can definitely make it if I fell from here.
Yeah.
And I would like negotiate it with myself.
Whatever you got to do to get through. Whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah.
I say do it. Also, it helps me if someone is more afraid than I am on a flight.
I was just about to say, that was a big turning point for me. After I really did a lot of work on the fear of heights, there was a woman, we were on a pretty turbulent flight, and this woman was really upset. She was near tears.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like reached over and patted her arm, and I was like, we're going to make it. I know I've got a lot to do. I'm sure you do too. We're going to make it. It's going to be fine.
I bet it helped her so much.
I don't know if it did or not.
I bet it did.
She was like white knuckle the whole time. She was very anxious. And I was like, I wanted to say, and if it is our, like, there's nothing we can do.
No, that doesn't help in the moment, but it helps. It has helped me to come to that conclusion myself.
Yeah.
But people have done that for me, and it really helped. I mean, the person can't be like, get it together.
Right.
We're going to be fine. Yeah. But if someone is like, you know, turbulence is babidi boo, and they explain it to me, it actually helps in the moment.
There's that. I usually will get like the in-flight Wi-Fi because I'm, you know, catch up on a little work right then, something like that.
Uh-huh.
But I also like to have Twitter open because I feel like if it's about to go south, I'm going to send a tweet and be like, I love you all, bye.
Yeah, right. this is no good. Right. Love, Jen.
Gooth out. Yeah. That's my last tweet.
That right. is your last right. tweet.
But I was tweeting about turbulence one time on a flight, and a reporter that I know said, you know, you got to just embrace it. There's literally nothing you can do. You can't take the wheel, and even if you did, you wouldn't know what to do.
Right, you make it worse. Oh. Things would go south real fast.
I don't even own a car. Why would I drive, like, fly a commercial aircraft?
My last tweet would be, I told you! Like that. No. I told you so! No, it wouldn't. I would just
there
say,
used to be a website that was devoted to people's last tweets. Because really? Twitter's old enough now that, you know.
Okay, that's a little sad.
But
yeah.
There's also a service that you can, like, leave to executors of your social media to turn last messages live. I don't think that's there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't need a website that shows me people's last tweets, I don't think. That's a little...
Some of it's kind of interesting and morbid. Yeah, some people knew they were going, and some people didn't, and just
right.
like...
I don't like the didn't
And it was kind of weird that it was like, oh, that's spooky, that was his last right. tweet. I don't mind the social media will. Like, I would be like,
no, that
okay,
I don't mind at all.
Jen, you have a password, yeah. and like, my brother's got a password, yeah. and if I go, turn this key... And essentially, this will post to Facebook and this will tweet and let people know. Like, those are my last things.
That, I don't mind that at all.
I don't mind that.
It's very clear.
Yeah.
Very clear and streamlined.
Maybe. But also, like, what's the word I want? I wouldn't want it to be self-indulgent either.
No, you just want the facts. And, like, your... How you feel, but not too much, not too like, and then one day I noticed, you know, like a whole.
Well, even then, like, I can only guess how I will feel about, you know, I don't know. I'll be dead. I'm not going to care.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
If it's possible to haunt you, I'll visit.
I like ghosts.
You know, I would check in if I could.
I would love to be a ghost.
And I hold slow
later,
your roll,
later,
please.
Later, later, later. Much later.
No hurry.
No hurry. But like, you know,
I say that to one friend of mine. I'm always like, okay, well, if I, you know, die today, I'll visit you. I'll check in if I can. I don't know what's on the other side. We always like joke about that.
Yeah. None of us know. It's part of the deal.
No. And I don't, I mean, who knows? I think I'll be dead and I won't care. It's not going to even be part of my.
I just want to haunt people in my nightgown, like floating around.
You want to go like OG classic ghost.
Like Casper situation. I'd be Jen the friendly ghost.
Sure you would. I wouldn't do it. I'd try to be helpful.
Yeah.
I'd be like, there's your keys. You've been looking for your keys for like
right.
2 hours.
I was
dummy.
Gonna say,
they're right here. Yeah. They're in the door.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of fears, but you know what? Like I was saying, 2018, I don't have to be ruled by my fears as much. Mm. I really don't. That's
None
a choice.
It is. Yeah.
I need to make. No one can do it for me.
And if nothing else, we can just say, what would happen if this wasn't scary to me? What
I
would
love
happen?
That. I would have so much freedom. I would fly to South Africa. I would fly, maybe not South Africa. That's
You'd
little,
love it.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Beautiful.
But like, that's a long flight to start with. But I would.
Here's the trick. You got to take KLM or American/British Airways because they stop over in Europe and you have a long time to go play in Europe before you get to Johannesburg.
That's smart.
Don't do like I did because I had a quick turnaround. I had to do the show Saturday night and then I had to teach Tuesday morning.
Wait, on your way home? Here?
No, when I went to South Africa, I had to do a show Saturday night. And then I had to be in front of a classroom Tuesday morning, and it's a 21-hour flight. So I left early Sunday, but then you have to sit in Dulles Airport for a while.
Yeah.
So I took the quickest, most direct flight, and that was like through Senegal. You stop for fuel, right. but you don't get off the plane, and you keep going. And yeah, that was a long time to be in an aircraft. I was getting a little stir crazy at the end, and I had like stuff to read. Then the Kindle battery dies. There's nothing to plug.
No.
You're just like, I've been staring at this seat for 4 hours.
Yeah. Right. No. No. We gotta figure out a way for Jen B to.
But you would fly. Love it. If you could get to Cape Town, you would absolutely
love
it. It's a beautiful
place. Many places. I mean, even, you know, flying to New Orleans can be a traumatic event. So it's not
But
even,
you've been to Europe. You've been to Prague.
I have. Yeah. But I'm telling you, when I was in my 20s, I was so dumb in a way, like just in that way where I was dumb at 24, yeah. that I wasn't afraid. I was like, whatever, let's party.
Let's do it.
But now, as things have happened in my life,
yeah,
I know what can happen, but that doesn't mean it should stop me from living my life just because I have life experiences that I have been hard for me.
Because it would be terrible to put on your tombstone, Jen B managed to avoid all those things.
No.
You know, you don't want that.
No, I really don't. So I'm going to work on that for 2018.
Producer Tom Hush told me right before I jumped out of the plane, we were texting, and he goes, dude, if you go, I'm going to tell people you went like you meant it. I'm like, good enough, right?
That's a great thing to say.
Yeah, he's like, you would have gone out in a very Amy Guth way. I don't know about that, but wearing yellow.
Guth out.
Guth out.
Yeah, yellow, no. But the goof, but the brave part, yes.
You only need to be brave for 8 seconds to jump out of a plane. The rest ain't up to you.
Oh, interesting.
You just all you have to do is walk to the back of the aircraft, and then you're out. That's it. It's about 8 seconds long. It was pretty fun. Anyway, our time is up already.
Already?
For the show, not in this life.
No.
All right, so we got to go back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth in for Bill and Wendy today. That does it for us on the stream, but we shall be back here tomorrow. In fact, we'll be back tomorrow 10 to noon on the air in the Showcase studio, and then back up here.
And then back on the stream.
Back on the stream, noon to 1 tomorrow and Wednesday.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. So it has been a pleasure, and we shall see you next time here on 720 WGN.